From KCRW, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is a bonus Halloween episode of Unfictional. Today, we'll listen to our classic holiday story of a party turned upside down when someone decides to improvise a Ouija board in The Seance.
In France, when we had a party, the idea was drink as much as you can, as fast as you can, and then put on James Brown's Sex Machine. Unfortunately, there was no James Brown available that night, so we had to think of something else.
But first, we'll listen to a brand new story just for this bonus episode that takes you inside a terrifying scene of a monster attack, all courtesy of a group of fun-loving partiers who use some fake blood and sausage links to learn a little something about growing up. It's a story from producer Caitlin Biljohn.
We were in those perfect salad days where we had almost no responsibilities. We were working and going to school, but we were also keeping our money in giant Corona bottles, routinely prank phone calling people, and doing keg stands with gymnastic precision. So while technically we were adults, our frontal lobes had definitely not fully firmed up yet. That was how it was until one day our friend Nat met little Steve. Now, little Steve was not little. He was a big guy with a big white beard, and he was a regular at the dinner house where Nat worked. He was famous in town for two things. He was always Santa at the Christmas train, and he always ran the haunted barn at Halloween. Half the time, he was a cherished holiday grandfather, and then the other half of the time, he was a warlock that showed you to the deepest depths of hell. His haunted barn was this creepy abandoned barn in the middle of nowhere, and people would come from all over to see it because instead of cows and chickens inside, it now housed various scenes of terror. So somehow Nat got involved in helping little Steve build all of the scary scenes inside the barn. And it was around that time that she came over to our house and sat down in our kitchen with our friends, Rachel and Jordan, and was like, "Hey, do you guys want to be in the haunted barn?" And up until that moment, the most exciting thing that had happened to us was that one of our friends was in the Genie in a Bottle video. We had all seen it on TRL, and we were like, oh my gosh, someone we know has entered the entertainment industry. So this was like my big break. It was like Christina Aguilera was in my kitchen asking, do you girls want to be in my music video or what? So we agreed to do it, and we decided that for our scene, we'd be a group of innocent campers mauled by a ravenous werewolf. So we got fake trees, a wolf suit, camping gear, and this little cooler that fit perfectly in our scene, but also doubled as a place to stash our real beer. We went to a butcher shop to get those sausage links that connect together to use as fake intestines that would look cool when the werewolf was tearing them out of us. We crafted the perfect formula for fake blood. Strawberry yogurt mixed with red food dye. So we packed up our little cooler with the fake blood and the real beer, and we were ready to go. We got to the barn and set up our little scene, and I was getting super nervous for our first audience. It was really dark, and Jordan and Rachel and I were all in our sleeping bags, pretending to be campers, sleeping outside our fake tent, which is kind of weird, like, why weren't we inside the tent? But there was no time for changes. The audience was coming. I shoved a few spoonfuls of fake blood yogurt into my mouth and just held it there. The cue was the chainsaw going off in the scene next door. When we heard it, we waited a beat, and then Jordan hit play on our CD player. And our werewolf jumped out from behind the tree and pounced on top of us, kind of hard, and yanked out all of the sausage links like there were those never-ending magician scarves. And I thrashed around and spit out all of the blood yogurt that had been in my mouth. And then I just went limp. The first group was totally disgusted by us, so we knew we were doing a good job. And when they left, we had to reset for the next group. So we'd stuff all the sausages back into our shirts, reset the CD, the werewolf would hide, and we'd wait for the next group. And the first five times we did it, it was so fun. It was exhilarating. We were like superstars. We were nailing it. After a while, we were like, wow, this has been a really fun experience. So how much time do we have left? Are we almost done? And it had only been like 10 minutes. We had to be at the haunted barn for 6 hours. And the people just kept coming and coming and coming. Chainsaw, wolf pounce, yogurt, sausages, reset. Started getting darker. The floor felt harder and harder. Ice cold yogurt was starting to pool up in my ears. Chainsaw, wolf pounce, yogurt, sausages, reset. It was sinking in. We just have to keep doing this one thing over and over again. All night long. We made one kid cry. He said to his mom, "I don't like this campsite." And I was like, "I don't either, man." Finally, when the last group had gone through, we staggered out of our scene, dazed, caked in yogurt, carrying our cooler full of untouched beers, now lukewarm. And we found Nat. We drove home in total silence. And the next day we woke up, and Jordan and Rachel and I couldn't walk because we were so stiff from being on the barn floor for so long. Our faces were stained with red food dye. And poor Nat kept coughing because she'd spent the whole night by a fog machine trapped under a plexiglass bridge because she was the only one small enough to fit under there. We were a mess, traumatized. And then we thought, oh shit, we have to go back there tonight. We had promised little Steve that we would do 2 nights. We were so tempted to just stay home, watch Lifetime movies, sit on the couch and just blow it off. But then we thought about little Steve. He was counting on us. And we knew that it would ruin the flow of the barn if we weren't there. And that's when I heard a sound. It was the sound of all of our frontal lobes crystallizing in unison as we became adults in that moment. We did what adults do. We grabbed our cooler full of fake blood, and we picked up our werewolf suit, and we showed up for work.
That story comes from Caitlin Biljean, who's a writer and radio producer here in Los Angeles. It's an unfictional Halloween special bonus episode, back in a moment.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
And before we get to the next story, I want to share a little unfictional update. We're busy working on episodes of a brand new season of stories, and the episodes you'll hear mainly have to do with how you see the world. You, in particular. Because even though you and I assume we're looking at the same reality as everybody else, that just isn't true. Stories of Perception, scheduled to hit your podcast feed in January. But right now, it's Halloween, and that's the perfect time to return to one of the first stories ever produced for Unfictional, about three people at a birthday party, until one of them, the Frenchman, has an idea to perform a séance with a Ouija board the way he and his friends used to do a long time ago. From Unfictional, it's The Séance.
The party really wasn't going anywhere.
It was a combination birthday party and going away party.
The only two people I know there are my friend Christy and our friend Deborah.
Christy and I have been good friends since high school. She has been one of my best friends for years. The party was in an old craftsman's house in Hollywood. Just so you know, I have a very bad memory and I don't remember very much, but I do remember very clearly a lot of this event.
The party was a hodgepodge of various individuals.
My girlfriend Becky was one of my roommates. Becky's boyfriend, Mike, he was a Malibu sheriff. Then there was Mark, the Frenchman, and my girlfriend Debbie. Then my boyfriend, Danny, and he was the rocker.
In France, when we had a party, the idea was drink as much as you can, as fast as you can, and then put on James Brown's Sex Machine. Unfortunately, there was no James Brown available that night, so we had to think of something else. And I started to wander off into the dining area, and there was a huge oak table. And in the back, there was an armoire. And a bunch of crystal glasses. And an idea popped in my head, and I thought, hey, There's nothing else going on here tonight. Why don't we do a seance? A long time ago, in my native country of France, there was no toy store where you would find a Ouija board. So we would line up Scrabble letters and cut up a piece of paper that would say yes and one that would say no, and basically improvise a Ouija board. We would turn a glass upside down, we'd put our fingers on top of the glass, and then you concentrate real hard.
It kind of just struck a chord that it would be something fun and different to do.
I kind of thought, whatever, we'll do it. I think in high school, maybe we tried it a couple times, but nothing really ever happened, so I didn't take it seriously and didn't really think anything of it.
I mean, I'm a spiritualist, like I believe in God, but I don't believe in Ouija boards. I wasn't taking it seriously. I didn't believe in that type of thing at all. So we lit some candles and turned on some, you know, Enya, and just kind of played around.
We cut out a bunch of letters, you know, to create the alphabet, put them around the table in a circle. There was a piece of paper that said yes and a piece of paper that said no. And we took a crystal glass with a stem and turned it upside down and put it in the middle. You know, everybody quieted down and closed their eyes. And I don't know if we are the antennas. I believe we are. And I believe that the glass ultimately is just a vessel, and it allows psychic energy to concentrate at the center of it. For those of us who had their fingers on the glass, and I think at the time it was Christy, Deborah, me, and someone else, we started to feel, after a very short amount of time, actually it was uncanny how quickly it started. We started to feel that very familiar little tug.
It was a little bit thrilling, like, ooh, what is this? I remember my hair kind of raising up, thinking, what could this be?
You have the sensation that something is connecting with the glass and then trying to find its bearings. It's very distinctive.
And then after a while, it started kind of getting a flow and a rhythm, and it started kind of moving in an eight, like a shape of an eight, and back and forth, and it was very rhythmic, but it was flowing and very smooth suddenly.
Of course, the skeptics immediately thought, you're moving the glass. And I would say, no, I'm not moving the glass. And a good way to take care of the skeptics is to command the glass to do geometric forms. For example, I would tell the glass to spin in a circle. You tell the glass to go faster and faster and faster. And let me tell you, that thing flies. It's so fast. You cannot coordinate four people that don't know each other, have not rehearsed this, and get a glass to move this fast. It's impossible. At that point, everybody went, huh, what's going on? Now that it was clear that something was moving the glass other than ourselves, one of us asked, who's here?
And started going back and forth to the letter K-I-K-I, or K-E-K-E, I can't remember how it spelled it.
And everybody asked, who's Kiki? And Christy was at the head of the table in front of me, just froze. I'd never seen her like that. And she looked down at the table and she said, I know who's here.
I knew it was Brian. Brian had been my boyfriend for about 2.5 years, and he passed after committing suicide. It spelled out K-E-K-E, which is Kiki, which was my nickname that Brian called me just in private. That threw me for a huge loop. That is something that I don't understand to this day. Brian was my first love. I used to think about him every day. I still have not been able to look at pictures of him, but I can still see his face in my head. He was very good looking, had an amazing smile. He kept a tan better than anybody that I ever have seen. Brian was a very lonely, sad person, but most people wouldn't realize that when they met him. When he would walk into a room, everybody was drawn to him, and he was really funny, and he meant the world to me.
I think she was stunned. I think she was pretty shaken up, and I think she, probably quite emotional about it because of the way things had ended.
Brian tried to commit suicide several times, and they put him in a little hospital, and then Christmas came, and I wasn't there, and I wasn't able to speak to him while he was in the suicide watch hospital. But I did find out that he got a belt and wrapped it around his neck and hung himself. A horrible way to die. And he was supposedly under supervision, and they were watching him, and somebody dropped the ball.
Are you in heaven? The glass answered, no. Are you in hell? And the glass answered, no.
We asked him if he was in a place kind of somewhere in between. He said yes. And then Becky asked how long he was going to be there. And he said 27, which is the age he was when he killed himself.
I find myself, sometimes, I'll get, a little tear in my eye, when I was talking to you, and then I just wipe it away, and it goes away, it dries away.
Christy went to leave to go to the bathroom, and then it stopped moving. We asked this spirit, where'd you go? Did you go with Christy to the bathroom? And it said, yes. And we asked him, okay, if you were there with her, what color underwear was she wearing? And it spelled out, it misspelled it, but it said W-I-T-E, white. And sure enough, she was wearing white knickers.
Now, just behind Christy was another guest at the party who was her current boyfriend.
This kind of glam rock guy sitting around the table, being really cool, not believing any of it.
I mean, what the hell? The ex is showing up uninvited at the birthday party and is getting all the attention. So he started to say, this is bull. And the glass immediately starts to move without having been asked a question. This is unusual. And spelled you. At which point, Christy's boyfriend replied, you.
And the cursor started spelling out his name, D-A-N-I, and then F-U. And it kept going back and forth, D-A-N-I-F-U. You can fill in the blanks, but Danny got very upset.
Now, what's interesting here is that when you have to say something like, and you're speaking through a crystal glass as a spiritual entity, it takes a long time to spell M-O, etc., etc.
Danny was getting really upset, and so silly. The Ouija board was getting really upset, which appears to have been Brian picking a fight, if you will, with Danny, my current boyfriend. It was very disturbing.
This is surreal. These two are having a cockfight in two different dimensions.
Danny was very hot-headed and very upset and ended up walking out.
My poor friend Christy was completely devastated. Meanwhile, the glass repeated several times, I love you, and then, I'm sorry.
I was just so almost frozen, just paralyzed inside my own head, thinking all these thoughts, is this really him? Why did he die? How come nobody could help him? How much I missed him.
I think that because it was her birthday, we didn't really want to continue, so we said goodbye. And I remember my friend Deborah and I drove back to my house and didn't say a word on the way back.
It's definitely changed the way I see things. And I'm the biggest skeptic. I wouldn't believe this story if I weren't there, and I'm sure many people won't believe me, but it happened. And
I know this sounds crazy, but I believe he was talking to us. Me.
I think that what is important is to stay open-minded to what life may throw your way. Because so much of our life is framed by social convention, religion. We're sometimes quick to dismiss something as, nah, that didn't really happen. And I think there's a little danger in that. You know, you can become a ghost yourself. I think the beauty of his story is not that it is a ghost story, is that it's a love story. And that someone was able to reach beyond the divide and tell someone, for the last time, I love you. Even Romeo and Juliet didn't get that.
Sur le sable, face à la mer, se dresse là un cimetière où les cyprès comme des lances sont les gardiens de son silence. Sur le sable.
The Seance was produced in October of 2010 by me, Bob Carlson. Mark Goldstein first told me that story. He's a photographer and designer somewhere in Los Angeles. Look for a season of brand new episodes of Unfictional this January. And until then, why not subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts or find our entire archive of programs at kcrw.com/unfictional. I'm Bob Carlson, the producer of Unfictional. The associate producer is Carla Green. The editor is Nick White. Until next time, happy Halloween from Unfictional.